vacuum on at 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. Vacuum on at 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Preston, of course.
Okay, great. I'm going to record it too, okay. If I can.
Hi, Dave.
Everyone, I think, should be able to do it. If you can't, let me know.
It's saying I can. Please ask the host to give you permission to record.
That's new realities, Alan. You're under new realities, Hank.
If you can.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, okay, so I can make.
Oh, yeah, Alan, now I'm recording. Yeah.
But Nicole, can you do it? Because it actually, I can only choose to allow you to not record. Don't allow to record is the only option I have for you, Nicole.
Maybe she's got it already. We got it already.
I got it. She must. Okay.
Because right. I gave it to her earlier.
Okay.
I caught the ICER meeting. That was really good.
What?
Tom Whitmore. Victor. No, Victor's not on here. Oh, shoot.
All right. I'll go ahead and record.
We're going to have Victor and Tom. They said they'd be here.
Wrong Zoom. Yeah.
Did Gary wants permission as well?
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it might be. Yeah, I'll put this on YouTube too. I need followers. Got to be able to get that. I want to be able to remote, and that's it. That's what sucks. You need that 1,000 followers, even just to remote.
Yeah.
Well, Mark Sims.
We had big numbers last time, so lots of people may show up. And Mark and Danny, I guess we'll wait for them.
Because Mark just requested a copy of the link. He just messaged them.
Okay. Who's going to
Mark and Danny together?
He said he found it.
Okay.
Does he have it? Okay, because I can send it to him.
He said
Mark and Dan and Don Schmidt.
Don Schmidt, yeah.
I know we're all coming.
Good.
And Victor.
Victor Vigiani, yeah.
So
he was close to on the last one.
Yeah, Victor. Well, because I just was listening to the ICER panel, and Victor and Don were both on it. Okay. And when Don signed off, he said, "Hey, Victor, I'll see you at 2 on the other panel."
Okay.
So I knew that meant they're both going to be here.
Oh, yes. Someone's here.
Good.
Oh, Dave and Mark Sims.
I dropped the link.
Let him in.
And sent an email.
And Grant, I got to run at 6, right? So I'll just, I'll chat you first to remind you, but I'll just have to.
Okay. Well, this is up to the host. It's up to Nicole and Dave to shut it down. It's 2 hours.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Usually it's
2 hours, 22 minutes, and 22 seconds.
Well, Desta, if you need to leave, though, too, that's something where you just go off screen, right? We can wrap it up if we do.
Not if it's live, because I have to shut down the live thing. That's the problem. So I can just shut down the live thing. You guys can keep recording, and I could edit the bottom in, but for the live thing, it'll go when I go. That's the problem.
Oh, we can do like a to be.
And I'm getting picked up for dinner. So if they don't come at the right time, I might be able to stay later, but for now they're supposed to be here at 6.
No, we might go 5. We better get started then.
Okay. So,
we can add people as they, come on too. So we don't need to wait.
And I got a special guest star with me today.
Fading in and out.
he's from a higher dimension.
Yeah. Yes. Fading in and out from a higher dimension.
Coming in and out of a portal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Lean forward.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. Wow.
Just out from the jungle.
Everybody's on here today.
Right.
All right. I think
it helps when you guys live in the same place.
Okay. A couple seconds.
Yeah, we're live.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Take a couple seconds. That's just going to put the link on Facebook. So everybody, we suggest to put the link up for people to link on. We had quite a few people last time. Hopefully we got more this time. We're doing a Pentagon pregame disclosure show today. And we have lots of interesting people on. And I'm going to turn it over to people who like to host, which I don't really like to do. So I'm going to turn it over to my partner, Nicole Sackage, and to the one and only host of Space Dot Radio, who actually had on his show this week, not only Danny Sheehan, but Lou Elizondo. So he's moving up in the world. He's getting all the big interviews. So I'm going to turn it over to Nicole and Dave Scott, and they'll introduce the panel.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
I'll just go ahead and jump in here real quick, and then I'll turn it over to you, Dave, to get us kicked off. Just a quick rundown of our guests here today on the panel. If you want to raise your hand as I call out your name, you can give everybody a wave. But joining us today, we have Science Bob McGuire, Dave Scott from Space Out Radio. Joining us in a bit might be Don Schmidt. We also have Mark Sims, Melinda Leslie, Preston Dennett, Tom Whitmore, and Victor Vigiani. And then later on, maybe an hour or two or a little later, we will be joined by some other special guests as well. So,
and I'm here with JJ Hertog, Alan Steinfeld.
There we go. Thank you so much, Alan.
And I'm here with Gary. Gary Voorhees is here.
Oh, sorry, Gary. You weren't on my initial list. Did I miss anybody else? I don't think so. All right, Dave, I'm going to hand it over to you for a second.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Nicole. Thank you. Well, this panel is made up of people who are doing a lot of great studying and research when it comes to what is happening with the UFO phenomena right now, because there is a lot going on. We have never seen this in this field, where the movement and the stories and the notes that are being taken by many people out there are absolutely being put out to the media on a daily basis. This is something that the field of ufology has wanted for years, decades. This type of credibility in the mainstream media, this type of credibility with the amount of researchers that are absolutely jumping on board, from those who've been doing this for decades and those who've only been doing it for the last year or so. With this panel, we're bringing together a bunch of different ideas, a bunch of different research, and we might as well kick it off, because the man of the hour is Lou Elizondo, the man of the month, the man of the year. And this man, along with Chris Mellon and Jeremy Corbell, for that matter, if we want to include him too, are really starting to make a ton of headwaves and a ton of progress, especially in the mainstream media, where this topic isn't buried at the back end of a Saturday night story. This is a lead story that is going on through the weeks. And this is something that is very important as we move forward. But are there more questions that need to be asked? Are there proper questions that need to be asked? Why now, for instance? What is the purpose of all this after 70 years of cover-up? And Grant, we're going to start with you. Another busy week here in the field of ufology, not only through the mainstream media, but a lot of podcasts and radio shows as well.
Yeah. So I've been busily following the story, following your interviews, Jimmy Church, everybody's doing doing a lot of these interviews. Been watching very closely Danny Sheehan, who I think is the key story in all the stories I've been following, because it wasn't until I saw Danny Sheehan was involved that I realized it was like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, that Danny's there and we actually have a chance to win, because I've dealt with the government a lot over the years with FOIAs and this sort of stuff. And the government will play the game that they really don't care. They've got the power. And I'll give you an example. And this story that I've told many times, but people don't really catch on, is that I was famous for the Rockefeller Initiative documents from the Clinton White House. I got 1,000 pages of documents that dealt with Lawrence Rockefeller going to the Clintons back and forth, all these things, Hillary Clinton playing the postman in between, sending messages to the president and stuff like that. And when the president left, I got the documents just before the president left, and I got the 1,000 pages. And then the president has 5 years to work with his documents or whatever. And then the presidential files are opened up to the FOIA process. So on the morning that these things opened up, I filed a massive Freedom of Information Act request with the Clinton Library. And one of the things I requested was the 1,000 pages of Rockefeller Initiative documents that I'd gotten when Clinton was in. And they basically said, sorry, we haven't got them. I said, well, you got to have them because I've got the documents. I sent them the index. I sent them the whole thing. And they said, nope, we don't got no documents. No. And they said, maybe the National Archives has got the documents. So I went to the National Archives. I said, okay, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which you'll hear John Podesta is advising that they may be involved in this, that he thinks they should be brought into the process. So I went to the Office of Science and Technology Policy at the National Archives. I said, I want these 1,000 pages of Clinton documents that I got when Clinton was in. They said, sorry, don't have them. No. So I said, this is nonsense. So I filed an appeal. The appeal came back, sorry, appeal denied, get lost. So and now, unless you've got a lawyer or a lot of money, it's game over. They just run the show. And so when I saw that Danny Sheehan was involved, I realized this guy, it's like Danny's day in the sun, where he's inside Washington, he knows all the games, and for once we've got somebody inside there who will give us some power to get some answers. So that excited me the most. I've followed this story. I won't get much into it, though. The story of the alien autopsy film clip. There's a lot more to that story than people realize. So I've done a little bit of work on that. But I'm basically following what is a situation now where stuff is leaking at an incredible rate. And I wrote a story where I maintain that this started back in the days of Tom DeLonge. It started with Hillary Clinton and John Podesta. It was John Podesta that moved this thing through. I was told in 2016, quote, a number of high-level officials are going to come forward and they are going to say that UFOs exist and they are going to force disclosure. In 2017, Lou Elizondo, Justice, Mellon, and Jim Semivan came forward and said UFOs exist and we're going to force disclosure. So I've seen this coming, but it's moving at an incredible rate. And that's what happens in the media, is that people think that the media is very sort of in the past, but the media can move on a dime, and you can see them moving now where they're suddenly starting to catch up. And Dave, you and I talked about CTV in Canada has been involved now. The national CTV has been involved, and the CBC, except that they're forgetting that there's to ask questions about the Canadian story. Have the Canadians been briefed? So when the CBC comes to me, I'm going to ask them first question, have you actually asked whether the Canadians were briefed? And see where they go and say, remind them, you are the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Get with it. The problem that we have with media is that the vast majority of media, it's the junior guy that gets the story who did something wrong that is forced to do the UFO story, and they have no idea what's going on. They have no idea who's who and stuff. So I'm very excited, but we in the community who know what's going on have to now speak up to the media, because they're going to need some guidance as to where this thing goes as all this stuff starts to unravel. The power is in our court now, especially with Danny Sheehan on our side. I think we actually have a chance that we could move this thing and win the game.
Very true. And the way the media has been covering this up in Canada, just to give everybody an example of something that Grant just stated, last week, CTV, which is one of the largest networks across Canada, their Washington Bureau reporter actually did a 14 and a half minute interview with Chris Mellon. The reporter not once asked a single question about whether or not Canada had any involvement in UFOs. How do you not take that opportunity as a journalist when you work for a Canadian company, you're a Canadian journalist, and not take the advantage of asking him, is Canada involved? Those two questions could have really broken this entire story here in Canada by fault and by ignorance itself. It wasn't asked. It was a missed opportunity. I'm hearing that more media like the CBC are looking to jump on this the American bandwagon with this that's good for the disclosure movement. And I want to bring in Bob McGuire here for a moment here in regards to this entire topic. The way the media has jumped on this, Bob, for the record, and someone who has worked in Washington, D.C., how does this information come out while still keeping the secrets of what we know? So, for instance, if we look at Jeremy Corbell, who is getting all of these videos, we don't know where they're coming from. We don't know who's feeding them. We know that quickly afterwards, the Pentagon is absolutely giving their 100% support and authenticity regarding these videos. How are they even coming out if nobody's so admitting to it?
John Greenwald asked the Pentagon, and they gave him an answer. Now, we take their answer as truthful or not, but what they said was, we want to make sure that when these things come out, we say they're real. And then he asked, were these authorized disclosures? And look, they claim Lou Elizondo never worked for them, but they claimed that these were not authorized disclosures. He asked if they were going to pursue them for leaking, and they would not answer the question. So that's number one. So I just can tell you that it's known that I retired from the community. I was at Virginia Tech for 10 years, but I still held the clearance and worked for the community. And I retired from Virginia Tech and the community in May last year. I saw I can't think of a single thing we have seen, and lots of things we haven't yet seen, that I did not see before I left, gave up my security clearance and left. So kind of what's going on is lots of people inside the government have seen this stuff, and they're spreading it everywhere. They're going, hey, did you see this? And attaching it to an email. And I don't think they'll ever track down where all of this stuff came from. And Corbell, my guess is that he just got approached by somebody who wanted to give him the videos. I mean, I can't claim it came from the Viper team that took the actual videos while they were in the CIC on the USS Kidd. But the videos, the Pentagon said that these were made by the Viper team on the Kidd, and it was their videos. But we do not know how they got from that team out to Corbell. I mean, so I'm just telling you that when I was in, I saw this stuff going around everywhere. And I stepped in it when I talked about a triangle thing that has not been seen yet. And the counterintelligence investigation was opened up, and they figured out pretty soon that that thing had gone everywhere. And I was just commenting that I had seen it. That it was, I didn't have access to it. Nobody had leaked it to me like they shouldn't have, but it was going everywhere. So I just think that we're benefiting from everybody and their brother wanting to see this stuff outside.
Right. Daniel or Don Schmidt, I want to bring you in here for a minute, if you don't mind, because for a lot of people out there who are trying to figure out the narrative, you have been chasing a lot of narratives, being very studious on the Roswell incident back 70 plus years ago. When you look at this, and at first it started with George Knapp back in 2016, starting to get some leaked footage and news on this. Then it switched over to Leslie Keene in the New York Times with Ralph Blumenthal. Then we saw it go back to George Knapp and Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon taking the forefront with the Two of the Stars Academy. Now we've seen a shift back to Jeremy Corbell in this, and courtesy of George Knapp. What is with this circle of journalists that are getting this story and breaking it out? Have you been looking into that at all?
I believe that's quite smart on whoever the inside whistleblowers happen to be, and that they're playing a shell game, that they're shifting as far as the direction of the information, that you can't keep up with it. And in one sense, it's a manner in which you can plug leaks. You can find out as far as you provide confidential information. And you can set someone up. I mean, we know the FBI are masters of this. But I hearken back to 1987, how there are similarities to when the MJ-12 documents came out, and how they were trying to release them through different media sources. And I, for one, the Jeremy Corbell of the time was the late Paul Harvey of ABC News in Chicago. And I would meet with him personally. And the deal was that Paul Harvey was going to break the story. I'm sure none of you have ever heard this before. Because when the team of Bill Moore and Jamie Chanderay and Stanton Friedman were ready to break the MJ-12 documents, they first went to us at the Center for UFO Studies in Chicago. And the deal was that I would set up a meeting with Paul Harvey in Chicago, and that he would run a series of broadcasts for a week with the hope of drawing out additional whistleblowers, so to speak. Well, it all fell apart. It fell flat. We know what became of the entire MJ-12 debacle, and that there are most people within ufology now dismiss them as just being crude, you know, disinformation documents. Nothing ever promised came to fruition. And as a result, many of us in ufology, we learned our lesson. And I believe that because of that, and especially with attorneys such as Danny involved, that they realize that, you know, they're no longer dealing with amateurs here. That we know what the signals are as to the immediate tip-off that we're dealing with disinformation. And even though disinformation has to have a smattering of truth to it, we realize that, no, now we're playing with the Pentagon. Now the Pentagon has actually entered the playing field. And as a result, if they set us up, everybody's still going to look at them and go, well, why were you even involved? Why were you acknowledging that these videos were genuine? And then you claim after the fact they're not? That it's ours, or that it's, you know, some foreign intelligence, some foreign technology, that type of thing. So they have the most to lose right now. It's no different than the original Roswell document that they acknowledged they captured a flying saucer. The point being, they started that. They were the ones who drew all the attention to the fact that they claimed they had actually recovered the genuine article. So to suggest that they're waving this carrot in front of our eyes right now, they better have an agenda that actually involves disclosure this time around. Because in the past, it could always involve just one lone reporter, one lone individual. The fact that they have approached multiple sources regarding this, I think they have opened up a Pandora's box that they no longer can close.
Is that good for ufology? Is that good for what we are seeing, or is it controlling a narrative?
At the moment, they're still controlling the narrative. But that's where united, that's where we collectively, if we stand together this time, and we just don't scatter and head for the tall grass and splinter off in our little, you know, as far as the minion groups this time around, we have to be prepared that no matter what happens next month, that we're at least willing to step up and take part of that narrative. If we don't, we'll never get it. This is an opportunity we may never see in our lifetimes again. We have to go for broke. If we're gamblers, put it all on the table.
Tom Whitmore, let's bring you in because you are highly involved with MUFON and highly involved in MJ-12 research on your own for your own special project that you're working on. Everything that you've seen so far with the way this is going, is this a dream come true from a UFO standpoint for people who have any sort of information or sightings or personal experiences? Or should we all be cautious right now with the way this narrative is starting to play out?
I advise caution. And like Don was saying, in the 80s, in the UFO community, there were rumors sweeping that some huge disclosure was getting ready to happen. And what was happening was that the MJ-12 documents were beginning to circulate among the UFO community. And when they did come out, on the face of it, it seemed like a big deal, like it really was a smoking gun. But under scrutiny, they did not stand up. Now, I have heard there is a theory that this is all pre-planned. The appearance of TTSA and then the testimony before the Senate and then the request to the DOD for a report and all of this. And then all of this rush of media activity. And I gave an interview yesterday with a gentleman by the name of Larry Sperano, and he's a journalist. And he's amazed that all of this media it seems to be coordinated. So I don't know if this was all pre-planned or not. You would almost think so. And if it is pre-planned, then I think we can expect some information. But the fact that Lou Elizondo is being questioned by DOD, you know, that he's getting pushback, to me, that works against that theory, unless that's part of the conspiracy as well. And I'm not trying to be conspiratorial here.
Right. Melinda Leslie, I want to bring you in here for a moment because, you know, one of the things that has been bandied about this last week is the fact that every talking head on this subject has literally been reading it off a script. Bob McGuire brought it up on Spaced Out Radio last night with us during our roundtable, but it all talks about the same script, the propulsion systems. It had no wings. It had no visible contrail or anything. Whether it's President Obama, whether it's Marco Rubio, whether it's Lou Elizondo or Chris Mellon, it seems like there is an obvious script that's being followed. Have you noticed that as well?
Yes, I have. I brought it up on the interview I did on your radio show with Dan as well. And maybe Danny will want to comment on this. But yeah, I did notice that that there seems to be these talking points that are being used, and just wondering. Oh wait, hang on, my computer is doing something strange. Get that out of here. Sorry about that. And that's it. Just I noticed that there were, and so I'm just in agreement that there are these talking points, that there seems to be a consistent message, regardless of who's saying it, from Obama to Newt Gingrich to the spokesperson for the White House to, you know, the press secretary for the White House and et cetera. Everybody seems to be saying the exact same thing.
Can I ask Melinda a question on this? Because you've been talking to Jim Semivan for a couple of years. And as I recall, he told you this was going to happen, that they were going, don't mess with the money. We're going to Congress. And he sort of spelled this thing out as well, didn't he?
Sure. From the get-go, and even in a recent conversation, you know, on that same note, it's probably a good time for me to offer up that talking to Jim just a couple of days ago, that he said that he says, yes, the report will happen. It'll probably get delayed. And just like we've all been saying, you know, it'll probably get delayed. The office, the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence will probably need more time on it. And then he also said, and this was kind of the one most surprising thing that he said to me, was he said, there will be a public report, but it will have surprises in it. He said it will have, he's hearing what's being said in the UFO community and everybody's skepticism. And he's saying he thinks everyone's going to be pleasantly surprised. It'll have a lot in it. Now, granted, it won't, you know, you guys, it's just dealing with incursions into military airspace and events involving the military. But that could be a lot. And that in a public report is a huge jump. I mean, we all know, we've already talked about it here today. We all know that this, what is going on right now, is unprecedented, you know, in the UFO research community, in our following this. You know, I've been in this 32 years. I know some of you have been in it, you know, 40, 50 years, that kind of thing. And it's like this has never happened. We are in the process, as it appears, of getting disclosure. And that's the one thing Jim said. He said, we are getting disclosure. And he said, it's a slow process. It's just the beginning. He said he thinks that there will be surprises in that report and a lot of data, a lot more than people are thinking. Now you're left with, what does Jim know? Well, you guys, he started up to the stars. And he goes way back even before that with this subject and with the working group. And you go into, okay, here's a man who's maybe in a position, again, Dan, I'd like you to jump in, but in a position to maybe know these things. Everything, like you just said, Grant, everything he's told me all along the way in 3 years that I've known him, or over 3 years now, everything has come true just as he said. So that makes me go, okay, is he right again? You guys, I don't know. I'm just telling you what he's telling me.
Daniel Sheehan, I want to bring you in here momentarily here for a couple of questions, just to respond to the narrative that Melinda was bringing up and the way this is all being planned out and played, number one. But number two, after the night after you were on Spaced Out Radio with Melinda and myself, Lou Elizondo came on my show, and you can tell there's a lot of heat between him and Dr. Stephen Greer right now, where Lou, actually showing some rare emotion, literally said, quote, end quote, "I don't negotiate with terrorists." I mean, was that a little harsh, or is there a lot of bad blood between these two right now? You're involved kind of in a tug of war between them.
Well, what I can say is this, is that I agree with the observations that Don was making a moment ago, is that whatever is going on, what we all need to do is all keep our eye on the ball here, stay focused on putting as much pressure as we can, not only on the officials in the Defense Department and in the administration and in Congress, to try to force them to say more than they have ever said before, and more than they intended to say when they started responding to this. But what we have to do is, all of us who have had access to information over all the years that we among ourselves think is fairly commonplace knowledge, we need to understand that now all of a sudden there's a huge audience of people out in the country who are hearing a lot of this for the very first time. And so what we don't want to do is, we don't want to get distracted by side arguments, or about one group thinks this and another group thinks that, or one individual thinks this or another thinks that. And what we want to do is, we want to keep everybody calm here so that we don't get a lot of horizontal bickering among ourselves. As we all know, who've been involved in this, I've been involved in this for some 43 years, since back in the time when President Carter asked for a classified briefing on the UFO issue. As you know, back when I was legal counsel at the Jesuit National Headquarters in their social ministry office. So I've seen this going on now for 43 years. And I think that we have this extraordinarily important opportunity to try to get everybody cooperating with each other. What we don't want to do is, we don't want to feed any of these horizontal conflicts with each other about, you know, who believes what, or who believes the MJ-12 documents are real or they aren't real. Do they believe that the video of the autopsy at Roswell is true or isn't true? There are certain things that we all basically agree on, and that is that the Roswell crash did happen, that in fact they clearly recovered the craft, they brought it to Wright Field, there were bodies recovered. There are certain basic things that we all know about that the vast majority of people in the country don't even know about yet. I mean, it's kind of surprising. So I'm very reluctant to get into trying to feed any of the tension that might exist between or among different people in the UFO community. I think that we need to be extraordinarily careful, because that's a distraction. The COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program of the FBI, for many decades, they specialized in trying to figure out where differences were among people in the anti-war community and the civil rights community and everything. And what they would do is, they would goad each other. They would goad them into saying things. And of course, when one person gets said something about them, and then they escalate and they say something, you know, it's just like what happens in the classic theories on in foreign policy of escalation dynamics. So what we need to do is tone things down, stay focused. To the extent to which Lou Elizondo is engaged in attempting to get at the information about the UFOs and get it made public. Dr. Greer is involved in the same exact operation, trying to get the information revealed. But there's a whole element of us that are saying, look, that we cannot rely entirely upon the government structures to make disclosure, because it's so clear that they are reluctant to do so for a number of different reasons you might theorize. But what we know is that there's an entire method of citizen diplomacy to actually reach out to try to establish direct communication with the extraterrestrial beings directly. This is what John Mack and I were doing. When Dr. Mack and I, we went through this whole thing for 18 months with Harvard University, trying to silence him about what he was doing. But we both concluded at the end of that 18-month ordeal, we decided that what needed to be done was help train people, in that case, using holotropic breathing with Stanislav Grof and some training, people who were having repeated contact experiences, direct contact experiences with the beings, that we helped get them trained through holotropic breathing to stay really calm when one of these events starts to happen, so they could then ask questions. And we started writing out lists of questions that we wanted them to ask the ET beings when they encountered them. So we began at that point, back in 1994, to try to establish a kind of a direct citizen diplomacy process with the extraterrestrial beings. And when I was asked later, after 1994, I was asked in 2001 by Dr. Greer to be legal counsel for the Disclosure Project. I did the same thing. I said, look, we have to try to reach out and establish direct contact while we're engaged in, quote, the Disclosure Project. We are, as the community, we are in possession of an extraordinary amount of information which has still not been disclosed publicly adequately. And so that now that we have this great audience, what we need to do is focus on sharing as much of the information as we are confident is true with the American people and with the rest of the world. And what that is doing is putting pressure on the government structures to have to either deny it or confirm it or pretend like they don't know what we're talking about. I think we're in the driver's seat here. That's one of the advantages when you can become the offense, you know, that we don't have to be defensive. We don't have to keep going to government structures and asking them to cooperate with us. You know, I mean, and Jim Sumivan is in this peculiar situation. If it's true that what Jim Sumivan, you know, has said to Melinda, that he was the director for the CIA of covert operations stateside, domestically, you know, that's completely unlawful. You know, the National Security Act of 1947 absolutely prohibits the Central Intelligence Agency from engaging in covert operations stateside. Now, I came to discover when I was one of the attorneys in F. Lee Bailey's office, when we were representing James McCord in the Watergate burglary, I came to discover that Lee Bailey was on a thing called Index 4. There were four top grade criminal defense attorneys in the United States who'd been retained by the CIA to defend CIA personnel if they were caught engaging in covert operations stateside inside the United States, which they were prohibited from doing. So I became totally convinced as of, when was that? That was 1973. I became convinced that the CIA was in fact engaged in covert operations against our people stateside. And so if you have that operation going on, you have COINTELPRO going on through the FBI, you had another thing going on with the CIA called Operation Chaos, and then they had another project called Operation Shamrock. They had all these processes that were explicitly designed to deceive the American people. And I don't think they've stopped doing that. And so the question of what the role is that Jim Sumivan is playing in this, I don't think I've ever met a CIA person who is not still a CIA person just because they say they're retired, just like a Marine. You never meet a former Marine. The only former Marines are dead. You know, anybody who's been a Marine is still a Marine. And anybody who's a CIA operative is still a CIA operative. And I have a very different opinion about the CIA than a lot of people do, because I've crossed swords with them, you know, for 50 years. And so that I'm waiting to have Jim Sumivan say something, you know, to talk with somebody, you know, grant an interview. If he wants to be in the To the Stars Academy and they profess to be engaged in attempting to get disclosure, how about Jim Sumivan talking publicly about what it is he knows, instead of just going around talking to people behind the scenes and always being listed on their little letterhead, you know, as part of the To the Stars Academy. You know, what does Jim Sumivan know? Just like the time that when I did I emceed this debate between John Alexander and Stanton Friedman. You know, I spent, you know, about 10 minutes interrogating John Alexander to try to get him to acknowledge that he believes and has reason to believe that there are, in fact, some of the UFO vehicles are, in fact, staffed by extraterrestrial beings from another star system. It was like pulling his teeth out in public to try to get him to say that. So that what I'm saying is, we have this extraordinarily important moment right now. And what all of us want to do, just like Don was saying, we all want to get going in the same direction, and we want to be supportive of anybody and everybody who's setting forth affirmative information, but we need to be careful, as I think Tom was saying, that we need to be careful and circumspect about people who are directly involved in a history of deceiving people and withholding information. But it doesn't mean that we want to get in an argument with them. We don't want to antagonize them. What we're trying to do is encourage everybody to come forward and participate in this extraordinary moment, so we can get out at least as much information as we possibly can to an audience that doesn't know 10% of what it is we all know, that are all gathered here on this particular discussion today. You know, the American people wouldn't be able to pass a test on what it is that's known to 100% degree of certainty by all of us. So that's the job that we really need to be engaged in, and take advantage of every opportunity when the Hill calls you, or the New York Times calls you, or Politico calls you, or any one of our shows, when Dave Scott calls you to be on the show, or anybody else gets the chance to interview, tell people what you know. Now, I have some restrictions on me now, not because I've ever taken any security oath, which I wouldn't take in a million years, but I have certain kinds of responsibilities to Lou, to if he says something to me, he says, look, I want you to keep this as attorney client. I want you to keep this confidential as part of the strategy that we're all involved in to try to get people in the government to come forward. Then I have to respect that just as his lawyer. Same thing with Dr. Greer, same thing with anybody else, you know, that it has asked me that they're going to give me particular information to help them. I have to be careful about that. But I've made clear to virtually anybody I ever represent that if you tell me something that I think is absolutely profoundly important for the American people to know, I'm a public interest lawyer. You know, I'm a public interest lawyer. I'm not just taking private cases, you know, for pay. I don't get paid for any of these cases. You know, that my reward is to get information which I can help share with the American public without betraying any of the confidences of the clients. So that's the kind of unique situation that I'm in. And I find myself in this not in a place of tension between Dr. Greer and Lou Elizondo, but in a place of tension between the American people and the structures of the government. And to always keep in mind, you know, two things. What is it that anybody inside the government knows that we want to tell the American people? But there's another third party involved in every one of these conversations, and that's the extraterrestrial beings themselves. We have to always keep in mind that at any given point in time, if a decision were made on the part of the extraterrestrial beings to reveal themselves or to communicate in some, you know, undeniable way, some particular piece of important information, they could do that. So they too are engaged in some kind of an operation that is not totally dissimilar to what Jim Sumivan is engaged in, not totally dissimilar to the activity that the To the Stars Academy was engaged in, you know, not entirely dissimilar to information in the way that even Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon are conducting themselves. When you put them in a corner, when a public interviewer puts them in a corner, and they say, I'm not at liberty to discuss that because that's part of my security clearance. They're out in public now. They're trying to figure out how to get this information out. And everybody here, everybody on this call is involved in that process. And that's part of the reason we're all here today, is to try to figure out how we can coordinate all of our activity and try to be as positive and supportive as we can be of everybody who's participating in this process. And that includes Dr. Greer, includes Lou Elizondo, includes Chris Mellon, includes Jim Simivan, includes Tom DeLong. I don't know what degree to which it includes Hal Puthoff or Kit Green or some of the other people who have a lot of information, which they're not sharing. So we should just try to do everything we can do to open the doors so that anybody who wants to really share this information, they can. And I have a standing offer to anybody, that anybody who's inside the government or has been and thinks that if they reveal some really important information, they're going to either lose their security clearance or they're going to lose their pension or be retaliated against some way, I will defend them and represent them for free. And we will use that as an opportunity to go after the information and to allow them to reveal more information in the process of their own defense. So that's the standing offer that I've made.
That's great. Danny, talk to Danny Sheehan, everybody. And, you know, Danny, you kind of put this in a very eloquent way, but to kick it back to history a little bit, I think what you're trying to say is right now we are sort of giving a new estimate of the situation at hand. And it's up to us to keep pushing out the correct information to the people that know a little bit less. And Don, I see you had your hand raised here. I'll kick it over to you. But then I would
quickly, I just wanted to,
go ahead. Go ahead.
In fact, that Danny's the first one that I've heard actually make that offer. And I compliment and I tip my hat to him, because even within the UFO community, we have not provided any contingency plan in the event that this falls short once again. Even if we are so fortunate enough as to have a disclosure with a small d, that we would be willing to listen to whatever whistleblowers and then provide them as far as legal counsel and legal protection, because God knows the government isn't going to do that. We've yet to have congressional hearings where any solid witnesses, especially military, have been afforded, you know, an opportunity to testify under oath as to their personal experiences. You just imagine the ratings alone if they'd be televised, as far as people coming forward and describing some of the most profound experiences that we know of, but that have never seen the light of day. And then one final point, interesting that former CIA director John Brennan, you know, actually acknowledging, yes, we're dealing with someone else's technology. Yeah, we're dealing as far as with hardware, that type of thing. But lest we forget another former CIA director, William Colby, who also made the comment that the CIA owns everyone of any significance in the major media. So there again, we come to the talking points and the fact that the media constantly is using that one talking point word, threat, threat, threat. And so that's why, as I, again, wholeheartedly agree with Danny, this is going to be a very slow process, because if we're dealing with a threat as they define it, they are going to set up the parameters and they're going to want to identify that threat, have as far as all the information possible before they finally acknowledge who the threat is coming from. So again, caution, caution, caution. That's, I can't emphasize it enough.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. Caution. And this is going to lead me on to another train of thought I've had after watching the latest from Knapp and Corbell and some of the young guns that were on to review some stuff with the two of them. There's this thought that we're not happy with what we're getting. You know, we want the perfect case. We want radar to back up testimony. We want FLIR to back up the radar. Well, we're kind of getting these things in the latest videos that Corbell has put out. And it seems like maybe the debunkers still aren't satisfied, or those of us, you know, keep looking at it and go, oh, I still don't know. But here we have this perfect storm of information and the community still isn't happy with it. And Gary, where are you at? Here you are. I'd like you to jump in and maybe comment on the latest radar videos that we've seen.
All right. Well, I take a look at it. It definitely looks real. I'm not familiar with the system itself, so I couldn't tell you any specific, like anything specifics about what you're actually looking at, other than they're real tracks and it looks all legit. The only problem I had with it is just if I can't track the video back myself, I generally don't, you know, I'll watch it and I'll be happy it's out. But, you know, like for me being prior military, like if I was, you know, the guy that filmed that, whether it was a Viper team member or not, you know, if it wasn't released properly, then somebody could go to court martial and literally end their career or even get put in jail over it. So, I mean, as long as everything is on the up and up, like to the stars did with, you know, our videos, I'm all happy. I'm super happy with it. I was just more worried about the personnel involved with releasing it. Cause I know how strict it is to even take a photograph in CIC. So to get a full video of actual active radar, it was a little, you know, it just felt wrong to me just because I went so many years, you know, with it beat into your head. It's like literally illegal to film there. So, but as for a total though, for like disclosure and everything like that, I think we'll definitely get a type of disclosure at some point. I think it's going to be new disclosure, meaning that it's going to be the current events that you see from like our event on, and then they'll say, yes, these things are real. We don't know what they are, but this is what we know. I don't think we're going to get the historical disclosure that everybody wants because of the ramifications of, I mean, think about the countless pilots that have lost careers due to psychological evaluations. Think of people that have been driven crazy and killed themselves over this, you know, mismanagement of information just because people were trying to gain access to, you know, general information that somebody had. You know, think about all of the lives that were literally ruined or destroyed over this whole subject. You know, there's never going to be a situation where they're going to admit all of that because it's too much liability. So I think that if we do get anything, it'll be very general. If it's anything historical, it won't be absolutes, but it'll be basically them just saying, yes, we're aware of this presence and we have no idea what it is. I think it's, they're just going to stay with that narrative.
Yeah. Which hey, many of
for
us
a while.
And Alan, I see you want to jump in on this.
Yeah. I just want to ask everyone, and maybe especially Danning, how far down the disclosure road will the A word, the alien or extraterrestrial, be mentioned? I mean, what does that look like? Also, one more thing I want to say is that the narrative may be controlled by the government and the media, but there's the inner narrative we also have to work through. Like, is this just some program science fiction movie? That's what I'm thinking. I know it's not, but it goes along with what Danny's also done with the Paradigm Institute, is that we have to each change my paradigm of how I see the world and realize we're going into an unknown territory. There's nothing that we can conceive of previously in human civilization that looks like the situation we're in. So those two things, the alien word and the paradigm.
Well, it's really quite peculiar. If you watch the interviews of Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon, and even the interviews of Harry Reid, that it's inevitable that they will get to this point. Each and every one of them get to this point of saying, well, it could be a Russian, it could be Chinese, you know, but it may be something completely different. And then people will say, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And then they will say things like, well, we may not be alone. I mean, that's actually part of the script. You know, we may not be alone. And so you say to yourself, what the heck does that mean? What does that mean? And then you some people press them and say, are you talking about an extraterrestrial from some other star system? And then they'll say things like, well, there are billions and billions of stars, and it's inevitable that there's life somewhere else out in the universe. That's so we hear what it is they're saying, but they will never say it. They will never say, yes, I believe that there's a realistic probability that these vehicles are being staffed by people from another planetary system, from another star system. They won't say it because that's an extraordinary a quotable quote. And if it's attributed to somebody who's the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, people will all start assuming that he knows that and it's being concealed. I think one of the most important questions that we have to keep pressing on, all of us, is that who is in charge here? You know, if it's not MJ-12, if those documents are deemed by a lot of people not to be authentic, then what is the group that is analogous to MJ-12? I mean, for anybody to keep on saying over and over again that nobody really knows, that nobody anywhere in the Defense Department has any coordinated understanding of what these vehicles are, where they come, nobody can believe that. I mean, I've always been willing to attribute a certain level of incompetence to any government organization because I've seen it so often, from police departments to defense departments to CIA to everybody else, but nothing on this scale. You don't have vehicles being monitored coming from 80,000 feet down to 50 feet above the water in less than 1 second, you know, estimated about 43,000 miles an hour, and then going underwater and traveling at 100, now 200 miles an hour or under the water. And all around our battleships and our aircraft and over nuclear facilities and turning off the nuclear missiles. And then nobody is figuring out who these people are. I mean, that's just not happening. So that this constant, aw shucks, you know, we just don't quite know what's going on, or everybody's in their own stovepipe and they aren't communicating with each other. You know, I mean, that nobody with a political IQ above room temperature believes that, you know. And so the thing we have to keep pressing for here is, who is in charge here? If secretaries of defense aren't being briefed in on this, if presidents of the United States are not being briefed in on this, if the heads of Senate intelligence committees are not being briefed in on this, who is it that's briefed in on this? Who is it that's doing the briefing in on this? You know, that exists somewhere. And that's the key to this thing. What that does is it bleeds over into the entire question about our government. You know, who is it that is in charge of really pulling the strings behind the Democratic Party, Republican Party, you know, the Senate and the House? Who is it they're all afraid of? You know, I spent 20 years in Washington, D.C., and it's perfectly clear that when you start pressing on them over a number of different issues, you know, for example, I brought a full memo laying out the smuggling operations of the cocaine operations being smuggled with Central Intelligence Agency participation into the United States. We tracked the Refrigerifico de Punta Reinas, the shrimp boat companies that were bringing these in, the house where they were being kept. I had the unlisted telephone number of the house. I had the code words you used to order the cocaine from them. I met with the head of the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency Strike Force, sat down with him, with one of his very best friends, who brought me to the meeting. And I pushed the memo across the desk to him, and he looked at it and read it. And he looked up and pushed it back to me, and he said, look, Dan, you know what this is, and so do I. I plan to live to see my retirement. Okay, who is it they're afraid of? You know, who is it that is knowledgeable about this? Who is it that are pulling the strings on this? Who is it that has the technology? Who is it that's garnered the technology? And, you know, there are people that are totally unbelievable who say, oh, yeah, I know who it is, you know, and they've got the whole secret space program, and I've been to other galaxies, you know, several, you know, none of that's true, you know, in my opinion. But the fact of the matter is somebody knows. And our job is, once this door has started to get open now, is for us to flood this door, bring in all the information that we know, give all the information to the American people, and try to generate a movement of people. And one of the things we need to do, very importantly, we have to participate in helping to communicate the spiritual dimension of this whole thing, or what is understood by the lay people as a spiritual dimension.
Right. We've got to get this across to people so that we can overcome this threat analysis, that everything has to be perceived as a threat against the interests of our nation state. We have to start perceiving ourselves as a planetary culture, a particular species that we are, and we have to develop our relationship with other extraterrestrial species. And that reflects upon all of our deep religious beliefs, you know? And these are things that we have to come to grips with in the community. So I think I agree with Don, I agree with everybody who's spoken here, that this is a unique moment in history. I know positively, based upon 50 years of experience with them, they do not intend to release any more of this information than they have already decided they want to release, for whatever their reasons are. Our job is to make more of that information available and to generate a nationwide, worldwide, planet-wide movement to insist upon our people being told about this, because we have to participate in this decision. These are sets of decisions that are being made now that are going to affect our relationship with these extraterrestrial beings for another 50,000 years in the future. Right. This is an extraordinary time period in human history, and we have to tread carefully but consistently and persistently to get these answers to these questions right now, and not stand for these people hiding this stuff from us for their own perceived advantage.
Danny, can I ask a question based upon that without giving any client privilege away? You started working with a number of the people who are now involved in this. Have you learned anything new from what you knew before? Because you'll hear, like, for example, Elizondo will say, "Oh, I can't talk about that. They'll throw me in jail." And that's the question I've always had, same as you, is like, somebody's got to know the classified material above him. So have you learned anything without giving anything away? Are you better off today than you were, say, 6 months ago in terms of what you know?
Well, it's interesting. This is the sort of epistemological question, is how do you know anything? You know, this is a very difficult area. Even if you're sitting down directly across the table from someone who has a high security clearance and they tell you something, you can't tell whether that's true or not just because they said it. I mean, it's one of the very first things you learn as a lawyer in doing cross-examination of anybody or choosing to put a witness on the stand, that you have to have extrinsic means of determining whether what they're saying is true. And so I have been told certain pieces of information which I didn't know before. I don't know that they're true yet, but I do know how to find out. And that's one of the advantages that I have. You know, I have a whole staff of people, not on staff all the time, but I have access to them, who are major professional investigators. They're investigative journalists. There are all kinds of people that, down through 50 years of practice, that I've come to know and trust, and they know how to go about tracking down the veracity of a particular piece of information. And so now I'm in a position right now to be able to be getting additional pieces of information which are purportedly true, which I have a responsibility as an attorney to undertake independent means to determine whether they're true or not. Rule 11 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure require that before you can, as a lawyer, make a specific claim, which you're making as an officer of the court, you need to verify it for yourself. And you can't just take one person's word on it, or even two. You have to be able to figure out if there are extrinsic means of proving things. And that's what I'm in the process of doing right now. So I'm trying to be able to, when I was representing Dr. John Mack, for example, then we were preparing, we had a weekend long meeting with Lawrence Rockefeller, and Lawrence agreed to finance a full grand rounds of information to Harvard University. As long as they were going to be picking on John Mack, why not take advantage of that and put on a whole series of witnesses communicating to Harvard University, which perceives itself as sort of the seat of the liberal ethic in Western civilization, you know, along with Oxford and Cambridge. You know, that why don't we have a grand rounds? My job was to figure out who the witnesses are that we were going to put on, more specifically, who the witnesses were that I was going to put on as the lawyer, because I have to represent to the forum that I believe that what I'm putting on as evidence in front of you, I believe it to be true. And that's what I'm in the process of doing right now. I'm attempting to figure out what's true. I've been involved in this for 50 years, as I've said, but this is one of the first times I'm in a position to be actually legal counsel for people who have access to some of this information. So I would have the ability to have my people, investigators and journalists and others, you know, undertake an investigation to determine what it is that's true about this. That's one of the major missions of the New Paradigm Institute that we're talking about putting together to mount this type of an investigation. But it, as I hasten to point out, there it has to be co-joined with a campaign on behalf of us as regular citizens or regular people to reach out to the people, the extraterrestrial beings themselves, to say, look, you are the ultimate determiner of what it is that's going to be revealed here. So that you are in a very important role with, that we don't want to go getting conned by you. We're not participating unknowingly as agents of any extraterrestrial civilization. We're not functioning as agents of Central Intelligence Agency or Defense Department or anything. We have to function as citizens who represent our species throughout time into the future. We need to understand the kind of extraordinary responsibility that has befallen us in our generation of people like ourselves on this call who have devoted our lives to trying to figure out what the truth is of this. I want to, as counsel for the Disclosure Project and counsel for the Citizens Commission on Extraterrestrial Life, and as legal counsel for Lou and legal counsel for Disclosure and legal counsel for other people down through the years, I need to exercise every single bit of skill that I have and goodwill that I have, that I hope I've generated over the years with everyone by being honest and straightforward with everybody, to help our community, you know, as basic, I guess, one of the very few lawyers who has dared to say the things I've said publicly about this subject and offer my free services to people to help us get this done. So that's where I am right now.
Wonderful. And everybody, I believe we have a new guest joining us here at the top of our next hour.
You know, JJ has some background information relevant to this from the history of the phenomena. Go ahead, JJ.
First of all, I've been involved for 48 years in fuel research and concur with Danny, particularly his theological background, which I also share, which is very important to look at the larger overview of more than 82 categories of ET events that I've investigated counting. But I wanted to share briefly that in 2004, several members in the Mexican military wanted to come forth with information regarding the so-called Campinas event of 11... Campeche event over Mexico, where 11 extraterrestrial ships were seen off the coast of Campeche, and this reached high levels. The Mexican government was prepared to go ahead with pilots and military who were involved in the investigations, but a call was received from the United States to simply not go ahead, to cool their heels and simply wait for further information. That information, which was critical to 2004, was never fully presented. So I'm saying that there is a reason why we need a grand strategy here involving other countries to put the pieces together.
Great.
Right. Which I guess this would be a good segue into our conversation panel about ICER. And I thought Victor would be here to join us for today, but Don, I think you can kind of give us a run through on ICER and this international conglomerate, I guess is what I've been calling it in my head. It seems like we've got representatives from each country or each continent here trying to form some good to maybe push this through to UNESCO and the UN?
Well, not that the current situation had anything to do with this, but we started the process over 3 years ago with meetings in China and then Russia, England, with the talk that if we would put a coalition together, representatives from five continents. And to date, we are up to 27 countries. We expect to be up to 30 and possibly even 50 by the end of the year. with the hope that we would then be recognized by UNESCO, be able to present papers at the General Assembly of the UN strictly on the UFO situation. And our timing right now for having launched this past week, we went public, and we've had an international press conference. We had a European. Next week, we will have a American press conference. And again, I could not agree with Danny more, the idea that there will potentially be a void, that if we are to trust the very people who have been the first of all, I find it amusing that the Air Force remains strangely quiet in all this. One part of me would like to believe that the Navy has finally said we're fed up with the Air Force speaking for us. Because as we all know, one branch of the military is in competition with the other. They've never worked together, really. And as a result, the Air Force, I think the best example would be when the Project Blue Book files were declassified in 1977 under the Carter administration. 13,000 cases. Where were all the Navy cases? All the Army cases? Marine Corps? It was a handful. And we're to believe that the Navy, who has had the greatest coverage of global surveillance in the past 75 years, way beyond the Air Force, who was only able to operate within sovereign airspace, mainly our own, and that the Navy hasn't been collecting these reports. They haven't had their pilots experiencing what now all of a sudden seems like there's been this plethora of activity. Well, I would suggest that this has been ongoing since World War II. So if the Navy alone were to disclose at least some preliminary studies, reports, activity that they've conducted over the past, you know, three quarters of a century, I think it would finally demonstrate that the Air Force was running interference all that time, that Blue Book was nothing more than a PR front, as we all know it was, and that now with countries that are uniting, that are looking at this and saying, okay, now we're waiting for the United States to set the pace, to demonstrate how they're going to handle this. And if it's, again, a disclosure with a small d, it cracks the door. And that's where all of us collectively have to be willing to put our feet through that door and say, okay, now let us tell you what we know. Let us tell you what the civilian groups have collected over all these years. Let us present our own whistleblowers as to who we've talked to. And believe me, and Danny and the others, as far as the Washington front, whether we're talking about former presidents, Carter, Bush, Clinton, certainly, Obama, who now has entered as far as the arena in the last couple of weeks. But then in the memory of the late Congressman Stephen Schiff of New Mexico, who represented us on Roswell, and then certainly the late Barry Goldwater of Arizona. And we could throw the former governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, in the ring, who has also offered to assist us. So we're talking, politics withstanding, we're in heavy company, all the way up to the Oval Office. So we got to stop being ashamed of talking about this. We need to stop feeling embarrassed that we have this knee-jerk reaction that the moment the subject comes up, it's taboo. Well, who made it taboo? Well, who even coined the very term conspiracy kook, conspiracy? Well, again, the CIA for their own agenda, for their own benefit.
Right.
We start taking control of the narrative.
Which that leads me, that I had a little moment on Dave's show when he hosted Lou the other night. Lou actually answered my question about the White House press secretary release, kind of giggling at the question even coming up, giggling that she was even asking it, and giggling that she had an answer, which, you know, after Biden threw it back to Obama and ran off the stage, was just like, ask Obama again. I think, Grant, I said to you, I said, sounds to me like that Biden wasn't prepared for that question. There's going to be a prepared statement. And so here it was. We're still facing that giggle factor, which it's up to each and every single one of us, like Lou did on SOR, to call it out and say, stop the giggling. This is no laughing matter. This is serious. We're taking it seriously. You should too. Just end it. It's like calling out a bully on a playground. You know what I mean?
I think we should print some t-shirts, stop the giggle.
There you go.
What do you guys think? That could be an effective campaign. Welcome to the panel. No more giggle.
Nicole, if I may add one last thing. I had a DJ in the Chicago market who used to constantly, you know, do just that. Play devil's advocate, but he would get personal. He'd get dirty. And I finally hit him. I said, you know, every time there's been a Gallup poll, it demonstrates that the majority of Americans believe in this subject. Well, let's take it a step further. The higher the education, the higher the intelligence, the greater belief. The greater the belief. So the point being, he was speechless. He didn't know what to say because I pinned his ears to the wall. Never had me back on the show again, but the point was made that, you know, don't play this game with us because we are the ones who are on the front lines. We're reporting as far as, you know, our activity every so often and giving you, you know, an opportunity to, you know, be entertained, you know, by the subject matter. But to us, it is not entertainment. It's the real deal.
Well, and I think to those of us, especially over the last couple months, it's become very apparent that we are covering the news on this, and mainstream media is turning to researchers like everybody here on this panel to get information so they can broadcast something, which inevitably is putting them behind the learning curve already. We already know more than them. Now they're starting to kind of pick through us to see what they can use, which is good, but that just means we need to be louder than we ever have before. They are starting to change this threat narrative, if you've noticed. They're starting to turn it to hostile, if it showed hostile activity, and play on words like that. But as we all know, even those of us in the community who have been studying this long, who feel like we know more than mainstream media, we often ourselves turn to experiencers and what experiencers are doing and saying and the contact that they have. So maybe I would like to turn it over to Mark Sins here for a little bit, and he could talk about his initiative as far as making contact goes. And then Preston, we haven't heard from you either. I'd like to maybe hear your voice. I know you could probably chime in with some cases or messages from experiencers, and yeah, whatever you want to throw in on.
I was going to get one quick word in. Sorry, guys. I have to leave in 15 minutes. We have people coming over for a barbecue. So I didn't want anyone to think that I was rude or uninterested when I sign off in 15.
Well,
sorry,
go. Let me ask you a quick question.
Let him go.
We've been talking about leaked information or information getting out. Have you ever had tapes sent to you, James? Have you had information given to you by the government or the military, or have you had to fight tooth and toenail to get what you've gotten for your movies or your documentaries?
I'm looking forward to some freebies.
So like, there's not a list of you like Corbell. He seems to have a channel. There's no James Fox channel of information to get out.
Okay. There's sweat equity, if that works. No. We had one weird thing happen. I would not first getting a hold of anything, but when I met with Jacques in the lab with Gary, mm-hmm. Something spooky happened during that time, and it spooked Jacques and in turn spooked me, but no evidence or anything dropped on our laps, unfortunately.
Right.
But I'm open to it.
But James, I just have a question. When you had Harry Reid there right in front of you for your last film, The Phenomenon, and he said, well, I can't tell you anything more or else, did you press him or did you, I mean, that was such a critical moment in the film. It just kind of.
Can you guys hear me okay with this microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Because it said, do you want to use the microphone on the computer or this? And I thought, I hope it's working. I wasn't sure what his level of comfort zone was, and we almost lost the interview about 5 minutes prior to him arriving, and I won't bore you the details on that. So I felt like I was kind of skating on thin ice. I did push the envelope a little bit when I got relatively comfortable, and I pushed it to, I think, about as far as he was willing to go at the time. And
it was such a critical moment in the film. It's like, come on, we're right there. Come on, just let it out. What do you know? And he stopped. So,
but he gave us, he did. I thought I was pretty impressed with what he said at the time. You know, I mean, you know, it worked for me.
can I ask a question, James? If you see John Podesta has now jumped into the fray with Politico making comments about Obama should open up. You did an extended interview with Podesta, and you probably only put like 10 seconds in the film. Is there anything you can tell us based upon your interaction with Podesta that might add to him being now involved in this? Because you had a long interview with him.
I can say that I have been in touch with him very recently. He is incredible. He came across incredibly encouraged by what's happening. And he indicated to me that he was doing things behind the scenes with the Biden administration.
Yeah, that's the question I had, sort of like, what do you think he was involved? Because, you know, Hillary came out in May of 2016 and said, the new word is UAP. It's not UFO anymore. And he's in the WikiLeaks where he had the meeting with the generals and Robert Weiss from Lockheed Skunk Works. Do you think that he played a major role in moving this out? Like, people think this just happened in the last year. I maintain that Podesta and Hillary were pushing this thing back in 2016, and then the WikiLeaks dropped and Hillary lost the election and it sort of fell off the tracks. What is your opinion on that?
I think he was contributing in the sense that he was publicly comment on the topic. I don't think that he was doing a lot from my meetings with him and my discussions with him, just the very fact that he was participating, you know, endorsing Leslie Kane's book, providing interviews, having meetings with Tom DeLong and that such. He did not give me the impression that he was working furiously behind the scenes to push for more transparency, but that his role was more, hey, I'm a fairly well-connected individual who's willing to speak out publicly on this topic. That's what he kind of shared with me.
Beautiful. Thanks. Maybe we can go to Preston.
On that same note, real quick, in my last conversation with Jim Semivan, he went on and on. It was a surprise to me that he suddenly brought up Steve Bassett and the background and the Podesta story. And here was the guy heading up to the stars telling me that was the background that allowed them to do this. He said that all of that, Bassett was right, all that background, Podesta's involvement is what was the startup to this all happening. So and that was I just wanted to add that he brought that up.
And I had put that in my book. And he commented to you that my book was 80% accurate. A couple of things were wrong, but
yeah, you're managing magic. He said you're mostly accurate. That's correct. Yeah, he did say that.
Preston, you want to jump in because you wanted to talk. Let's hear Preston.
Yeah. I would like to jump in. First, thanks for inviting me to this panel. It's amazing group of people. We've got a couple hundred years worth of UFO experience here, at least. So this is pretty exciting times. I've been involved in this field for about 35 years and been watching it very closely in terms of disclosure, especially. And I'm very excited about what's happening now, but I think I'm speaking mostly to the viewing audience here because you guys are already UFO experts, so to speak. But the cover-up is no joke. I mean, this is a very serious subject at very high levels. In terms of public studies, there's been Blue Book, the Conning Committee, the Robertson Panel, which spent millions of dollars basically saying that there's absolutely nothing to this and it's no threat. There is no threat to national security. So I find it interesting that there's a complete reversal on like, yes, this is a threat. I think that's completely disingenuous. But yeah, the cover up is no joke. I know people who are contactees who are being surveilled by government officials right now. I personally was called up and threatened during my investigation into the UFO wave over Topanga Canyon. So that's one point I'd like to make. I have six quick points. The second point I'd like to make is that disclosure has been happening for a very long time. I think there's been people within government trying to push this out. And
oh, you have to ask mommy if it's okay. Go ask mommy.
So, the second point I'd like to make is that there have been a lot of people within high levels of government who have seen UFOs. Back in 1952, Congresswoman Isabella King of Arizona saw a UFO. Senator Russell, 1955 of Georgia. 1966, Governor Burns of Florida. Of course, Jimmy Carter, 1971. 1973, Governor Gilligan of Ohio. Dennis Kucinich, Governor Reagan, of course, Fife Symington. This has been something that's been bubbling, simmering for a very, very long time. So that's a quick point I'd like to make. I want to echo what other people have said in the panelists. We all have our part to do. I know Melinda Leslie has talked a lot about her own experiences and is showing other people UFOs. I'm not a lawyer. I can't fight on that front. My front has been basically to educate people about the UFO phenomenon, but I have been contacted by a number of government whistleblowers. I talked to a gentleman by the name of Ray Sachs, who was an electrician's mate on the USS Clamagore, which carried nuclear-tipped missiles. They had an incredible USO encounter where an object basically paced the Clamagore for 15 minutes. This was not publicly revealed, but I put it out. I talked to Dr. Gary Wagoner, a Navy officer on the USS Long Beach, a missile cruiser. I talked to Nell Hansen. His testimony is now out. He was a firsthand witness to the Malmstrom incident in 1967. So I've been trying to do my part, and yeah, I want to encourage everyone else to do what they can. Another point I want to make, number four, is what is the end game to disclosure? For me, I want to see the Roswell craft in a museum. I want to see the bodies. I want to see the film footage taken or collected by Gordon Cooper at Edwards Air Force Base, or for that matter, the Eisenhower meeting on February 20th, 1954. That was allegedly filmed. That's a true incident. I think the evidence for that is growing and is not going to go away. Fifth point I'd like to make is I think the ETs are a big part of this. They have been pushing for disclosure for a very long time. This is something I've heard from many contactees. They've been conducting a vigorous publicity campaign. This is why I think we have the Phoenix Lights, it's Gulf Breeze, the Withville, Virginia wave, the Belgian wave, the French wave, Hudson Valley. I mean, it goes on and on. They are doing regular appearances. The sighting over the Rua Zimbabwe school, I'm sure you've all heard of that. That is not unique. I've documented more than 100 cases where they are hovering over schoolyards. No kidding, showing themselves to large groups of children. Got 100 cases where they've hovered over drive-in theaters. They are doing a very vigorous publicity campaign. So my final comment, number six, which is regards to this coming disclosure announcement. I think we've got two real battle fronts here. One is getting the government to admit that this is not an unknown. That's completely disingenuous. They know exactly what this is. They've known since the early 1940s that this is extraterrestrial. So getting them to call it aliens, I think, is something we have to really work hard on doing. And second is that this is not a threat. That's an absolutely ridiculous, ludicrous notion. I've documented some 300 cases of people healed of ETs. The ET's number one message to people is don't be afraid. We won't hurt you. Stop messing around with nuclear power. Why are you polluting your planet? You got to stop these wars. And they spiritually wake people up. So those, I think, are our two main things we really have to push towards. The end game of disclosure. Call it aliens. Show us the Roswell craft. And no, it's not a threat. So yeah, thanks for letting me have my say. And I'm super excited to be a part of this.
Bravo.
And Preston, I'm going to point out that is exactly what Valet said about your research and why everybody should be paying attention to what you're diving into. He said you have the best research out there to prove that it's not a threat based on the healing work that you've done. So bravo on that. I think everybody needs to pay attention to it. I'm bringing the book so you can sign it at Laughlin for me.
Awesome.
Thank you, thanks. Preston.
You guys, the whole threat angle, I brought that up many times as well. Like, come on, what's this language, threat language? And honestly, they kind of go, well, it's getting the attention of Congress. You've got unknowns operating in sometimes secured airspace. If it had a Russian flag or a Chinese flag, it would be all hands on deck. It's really to get the attention. You know, Jacques has been saying that. I've had other military government officials actually say, well, you know, I was like, come on, man. If it was a threat, they would have vaporized us a long time ago. Come on, let's get real here. They're like, well, you know, it does get the attention of Congress. So I think that language is strategic. And I think, unfortunately, it's kind of working. But I agree with you guys that it's, you know, if it was a threat, you know, they would have vaporized us a long, long, long time ago.
Yeah. So once we kind of move it away from this threat narrative and everybody plays catch up a little bit, and here, maybe I'll phrase it this way. Once we achieve moving it out of the DOD or the military complex and we get it into somewhere like our Department of Education and get it to our scientists, that's when they're going to start turning to people like Mark Sims, who is trying to make this contact in a very scientific and special way. So, Mark, I'm going to let you jump back in. I gave you a little segue into it again. So please take over.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's such an honor to be with this distinguished panel of people who has so many great points to make. And it is a special time, of course. For those of you who don't know about me, because I'm relatively new to this scene, I had a face-to-face contact experience in Borrego Springs, California, that lasted for 13 days. I was awake, had dialogue, and spent 13 days asking an extraterrestrial whatever question I wanted. And what I learned blew my mind on many levels. And it began my journey in bringing me to this moment in time, frankly. I have become very dear friends with Danny Sheehan and his family. And many others here in this community now know me because of this event that took place back in 2012. And I just feel like I'm on a mission to bring about ultimately a citizens diplomacy initiative. That's really what I see as the end game to this, that the government has done their job now. They have acknowledged the existence of these craft. In some cases, they're even going so far as to saying they're not ours and they're not other countries. If you can, you know, read between the lines, they're basically saying, you know, they're from upstairs. So now the job is on our laps. We, the experts of this phenomenon, of this of who and what they truly are, and like Preston just mentioned, they have a track record of being benevolent, of having our interests collectively at heart and warning us of these times that we are seeing now. And so that's why I believe this is all happening now, is because the time has arrived. We have some serious problems facing us as a human family. We need to step up, grow up, and take responsibility for ourselves and our planet and treat each other kindly with compassion. And we have the technology and the means and frankly the wealth to take care of all of the world problems. It's time for us to get serious about, you know, becoming adults in the cosmic community. And they have been watching us and they are encouraging us and supporting those of us here that are in this discussion right now. And I feel my role is to tell my story, which is amazing, mind-blowing, what I discovered, what I learned from Tejbar, this being from 9 years ago now. And I'm on a mission along with Danny and others here to organize a meaningful, respectful disclosure initiative, a diplomacy initiative in which we will reach out and make diplomatic contact and relations, establish relations with these beings because they're ready. And I know everyone in this talk is ready for that.
Mark, I didn't realize that ayahuasca lasted 13 days. Is that I'm kidding.
Of course you are. I didn't do ayahuasca. I've never done ayahuasca my whole life. I'm really, not a very, when I was younger, I did some pot in high school.
You're starting to sound like President Clinton right now. No. I didn't inhale. No, I was just going to say, I often ask myself, I look at what they do and then I look at what they don't do. I think, gosh, very simple, like the Travis Walton case, they cared about his well-being.
That's right.
If they would have dropped him off where they picked him up, he wouldn't have made it out of there alive. If they would have dropped him off in broad daylight, it would have confirmed everything that happened. But they dropped him off in this valley right on the outskirts of town, right? So they would minimize any potential exposure on their half, and they would increase the likelihood of him making it safely into town or into safely back. And I thought, wow, that's rather interesting. And all they really would have to do, and they've done these fantastic displays, is hover over Macy's Day Parade or a Super Bowl, and it's done, game over. But they don't do that. It's interesting. They go just far enough and then they back off. It's like, God, I think Heine said he was waiting his whole life for the one definitive case, but.
Gary wrote something in the text that I think we should address. Gary, why don't you bring up what you said to us in the text? Because I think it's important that be addressed because, okay, I'll let Gary go ahead and say that.
Although I get on board with just about everything you guys mean and you guys say, but like there's like some serious issues I take up with saying that, if we are being visited by aliens and most of you guys truly do believe that we are, I have to say I've never actually physically seen one. So I leave it to my own speculation until I see one, but say we'll just assume they are. Saying that all aliens are benevolent is like saying all humans are good. Good and bad are relative to the individual's belief sets. So being that, we're also assuming that they have the same range of emotions that we have. They may have a disconnected belief system like, people that we have here on Earth that have no ability to have empathy. They exist in our own society. So to say that there's not a situation that couldn't be bad from this is like kind of being naive. I believe that we should go completely forward with the fact that most of us are good, but there could be bad with the good. It's a full package. We need to accept all of it, the good, the bad, the dark, the light, everything.
I'd like to answer that point. And that's a very important point that you're making, Gary. I certainly am not saying that all ETs are benevolent. I want that to be very clear. I do believe that the ones that are reaching out to us, the ones that Preston described, all these cases that James Fox just brought up, are cases in which clearly they were benevolent. It's a complex story. I've had the privilege and the honor to have been given a full history on our planet. And it's a complex story. It's an amazing story. And there's an answer to this question, who are the malevolent ones? Because maybe there are some malevolent ones, at least from a various perspective, from possibly your perspective. You may have either heard stories that indicate this to you and that you believe that there may indeed be malevolent. I am of the belief that maybe. but the point is that there are two big points here. The ones in which we are going to make diplomatic relations with, I believe, will be benevolent. And that will become apparent very quickly. Secondly, that the story, this is the end game of reaching out and making diplomatic relations with, establishing diplomatic relations with these highly advanced and spiritually advanced beings. And that's key. And we're not talking about that enough here. These are beings that are spiritually advanced, and they have had a kind of hands-off, you know, the prime directive has been a guiding principle here. And that's why it's the ball's in our court to reach out to them. And we have a responsibility to bring along some contingent of the human family to educate them so that they don't freak out when there's a global event, when they show themselves for the first time to the entire human family. So we have some work ahead of us. I believe this reaching out process is only the beginning of a multi-year plan that we're all going to be a part of to help those of the population that have no clue what's going on. We have a responsibility to tell the story. Those experts that are here, the historians like Danny.
I agree with you, Mark. The ET interface is by and large peaceful and purposeful. I cite the work that I shared with Gordon Cooper, who in 1951 saw a flotilla of spaceships over East and West Berlin and realized we were dealing with higher powers that could change the course of history, but wanted us to change our consciousness. So this is very important as we go into space law and negotiation with the cosmic others, that we see the higher criteria of our consciousness change and involvement, because there's so many categories, but we're all connected through a higher consciousness that can go beyond the nuclear scenarios and the old paradigms of confrontation that have limited us in the past, particularly the nuclear mindset that certainly it has been the troublesome factor of why there hasn't been active engagement.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
I guess I got the only retort I really have to any of that is that even amongst the people here, although we have a lot of positive descriptions of these interactions with people that are willing to go with them, but I've also heard hundreds of stories of people being ripped from their families against their will, raped, artificially inseminated against their will, given babies against their will. How can that be, you know, morally correct? And if we do go into this space law, who's going to be held accountable for all of those crimes against humanity?
Well, that's a very good question, and I agree with you, Gary. I believe the abductees, many of them that claim the things that you've described. And so the question we have for ourselves is how possibly could that be justified? Certainly it, you know, seems like these are crimes against humanity perpetrated by these beings. But if you have been following the abduction cases, and especially the people who have been interviewing them, people like Barbara Lamb and Mary Rodwell, what they have seemed to be learning through the many years of talking to these abductees who have continued to be abducted, many of them, that their attitude, while initially was very scary and traumatic, has evolved. And now they have a completely different perspective on it, many, many of these cases. And so, you know, that's something that should be considered here, that if you're not familiar with that, talk to people like Barbara Lamb and Mary Rodwell and others. You know, so it can be scary. Of course, your first, you know, another person, of course, is my dear friend, Whitley Strieber. I mean, if there's, you know, I can't think of a more famous abductee who's done more writing on his personal account than Whitley. And he was terrified. He was raped. And he'll tell you that. He was raped, and it was scary, and he thought he was going crazy. It almost ended up in the divorce between him and his wife, Anne. But eventually, he, over the years, began to discover that there was some bigger plan involved, and that he was being engaged to play an important role in helping, tell the story, their story, and our story, because we are connected with them, intimately connected to them. And that's what's so mind-blowing here. And I see James Fox raising his hand.
I just want to say what an exciting time. Thank you, by the way, for that, Mark. What an exciting time we're all living in. I think people like Stanton Friedman, it breaks my heart that he's not alive today to witness what's happening, and how fortunate we all are, and the roles we've all played, and to see progress being made. Whether, look, no one's going to ever agree on every aspect of what's happening. There's always going to be nitpicking, but overall, it's quite fascinating, mind blowing. I would have never dreamed in my lifetime that we'd be seeing what's happening. And so it's very exciting. And I want to thank each and every one of you for everything you guys do. And I've been inspired by a number of you over the years, and yeah, thank you. And I have to go right now, because I have to go get ice for a barbecue. So, but thank you.
Life goes on.
Thank you, Nicole, for reaching out for reaching out and inviting me and stuff. So
anytime. Yeah.
Thanks. That was great. Thanks, and enjoy your Memorial weekend. And if you have time later tonight, Danny and I are going to be on Saturday Night Alive at 6 p.m., and we're going to be talking more about this Citizens Diplomacy Initiative.
Well, Nicole's been really great with keeping me in the loop, so I appreciate that.
I can send you the link, James.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to
want to address, as an abductee, what Mark was saying, and Preston might join in with me here. I'm an abductee and an abduction researcher. I've been public with my experiences for over 30 years now, and my research and or my experiences have been included in 29 books now. But I've not written my own, so I can't claim that like Preston, who has been a prolific writer on the subject. But my research experiences have included. Anyway, so the reason I just said that was to address what Mark just said. Mark, you have a really good beat on that. You're absolutely right. And Gary, so you know, and anyone else out there listening, a lot of abductees come, even though, like, even with me, initially my experiences were traumatic. And so it's very typical for an abductee to originally relate to their experiences as traumatic, difficult to live with, very isolating, and the kind of the frightening, part of them. But then over time, like Mark just said, over time, then you learn to change with that. And it's very typical. I mean, I'm sure you can address this. I've worked with hundreds of abductees, and everyone over time has a different view of their experience as they live with it and mature with it and grow with it, just like Whitley has expressed. This is more typically the norm with people with experiences, Gary. Now, I'm not negating anyone out there who's had a frightening or negative experience, but also how new are you to dealing with it? How many regressions? How long have you lived with it? How many support groups have you been in, et cetera, because your view of it will change over time. But at the same time, people do have those experiences. So it needs to be at least, given a place in this conversation to say that, yes, there are those people with those experiences. And I encourage them to investigate, work with a therapist, a trained hypnotherapist, get in some support groups, get some help, because again, usually your idea and your perception of those experiences changes with time. Preston, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I do. Just real quick, I would say that ET behavior falls under the same umbrella as human behavior. I have talked to people who've had very negative encounters, and I would never in a million years discount that. And sometimes they don't change. I mean, it's negative. Sometimes it's just that way. The worst I hear is the physical examination. And if people have a very strong fear response, that's often the only thing they remember. They don't get to the good stuff. So yeah, what I don't have in my own files is straight out sadism, accounts of torture, ETs wanting to hurt people or, you know, getting off on that. No. So I think it would be a lot easier to prove humans are hostile than the ETs. But there's a wide variety of ETs. It's not just grays. There are unique humanoids we never hear from before or afterwards. So it's a huge, huge universe. I would never in a million years say they're all our space brothers. But I think just the fact that we haven't been invaded and that we're not on the dinner plate speaks volumes.
That's a really good point, Preston. It's a big universe. It's, you know, the number of galaxies being discovered all the time, the number of what we believe are the planets. Astrophysicists and astronomers now agree that pretty much every single sun is a planetary system. And that means every sun in every galaxy is a planetary system. There's no way we can know the intent of all the other species or beings out there. And, you know, and where they are in their own evolutionary range, there's no way for us to know. And anyone who says it's all this or all that, come on, we don't know that information. There's no way to even say that.
I'm going to butt in and bring up another controversial topic that's made headlines over the last week or two. And I'm going to point fingers a little bit at Grant here on this one, because he did catch some flack saying that if this is true and these are real images, then Grant's being an insensitive human by posting this. And I'm talking about the alien autopsy auction that's coming up. If these are true images, we are showing another being splayed out on a table. And it's kind of rude of us as humans to be commenting on it. But Dave Altman, you've been very patient and very quiet. I think you passed information to Grant, so
I got a new setup. Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay, because I have a new computer here. That's why I wasn't sure. Never used it before. So, what would you like to know? I mean, it's pretty much out there, and the auction is going on. It's still going on right now. I think it's over in like 2 days. It'll be over. And I don't have any stake in the game, really. I met Ray and Gary last year. Mm-hmm. Huh? What, Grant?
No, it's midday tomorrow.
Grant, did you say something?
Yeah, midday tomorrow the auction ends.
Am I back?
You're breaking up a bit.
Now we're losing.
Yeah, it ends tomorrow.
Dave's down.
So, I met those.
Well, Dave, I'm going to rat you out a little bit.
How about now?
Nope.
You're breaking up, Dave.
Better?
No, you might have to log off and log back in, but I'm so sorry. I think that's what he's going to try. No, I was actually going to have him comment. I believe he's had a conversation with Rick Doty about this recently, and I wanted to see what 2 cents that was going to throw into the conversation.
Well, I had the conversation with Doty. I think Doty just goes into the fact that Kit Green, they all believed that they had a meeting in Kit Green's office about this, about the alien autopsy. And so he was just backing up when I interviewed him about where they actually involved. And he said he couldn't confirm that the material in the Kit Green memo was real, but yes, all those people were involved and he was involved in the meetings. And most people didn't believe him, but it was confirmed that Richard Doty worked for Hal Putoff for 12 years. So they were using him. Can I make a comment on the evil alien thing? Because this is my favorite topic.
Yes,
I'll only do a little bit. It's okay if you want to bring in religion and there's good and bad and God and the devil and all this kind of stuff. but the ones that dropped the atomic bomb. So if it doesn't get much eviler than that. So if there are evil races, then we are the evil race. I mean, it doesn't get worse than dropping an atomic bomb on civilians. And you can say, you know, there's different degrees. The part that bothers me is when we put them in categories, that the worst are the black reptilians, then the grays are the next worst, and then the Caucasians are the good guys, and the best guys are the ascended masters, the great white brotherhood. You can see that we're reflecting on what we do. And I just posted this week about this, that the idea of who is an evil race keeps changing. And I posted in Canada, Prime Minister Trudeau just did an apology to the Italian Canadians. And in the United States, I posted this proclamation by President Roosevelt about the alien enemies, the Italians in the United States. So the race that we seem to pick on, it was Italians in World War II. It was the Germans in World War II. It was the Japanese. They were all interred, put in concentration camps. Then we went after the Vietnamese. And then the Vietnamese were good guys because they were building Nike runners. And we just keep moving it. So if you want to say, but once you start getting into races, I just remind you that it's a reincarnation world. And if you happen to be born as a gray, are you now suddenly evil? This is nonsense. When we start putting it into races, that there are good races and bad races, it's simple racism as far as I'm concerned.
Amen to that.
I agree.
I wonder if we want to have it.
We call it exo-racism.
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 Dave Altman, do we have you back? How's your sound?
Tell me.
It sounds a little better to me.
Not better, no.
No?
No.
Oh, hang on. What about that?
I've got a question for Dave. I've got a question for Dave. I went on to the Rarible website, rarible.com, where the autopsy is actually the main thing that pops up on the website for the auction. And okay, it appears that the minimum bid that's being accepted is 450 Ethereum, which amounts to over $1 million. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to do with that except for handling some PR for Gary and Ray, but that is correct.
That just seems a little outrageous. That's my own two cents. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to do with that. You know, like, I work in television, and that's how I met those guys, and I kind of helped them out with PR for it.
Yeah, I would hope that $1 million would go towards, you know, other causes.
But if it's real, then think how much it's worth.
Well, you know, I've done a lot of work on my own research, and there still isn't, I think, a definitive answer on whether that's authentic or not. That's my own opinion.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, it could be. I don't know. I mean, I can say personally knowing those guys, they've never once even hinted that it could be fake. Okay. Could be for their own motives. I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I will point out that they stated, I believe it was in one of their recent interviews, or maybe Grant, when they sat down with you, they kind of set that price based on what somebody could potentially make off of this. And that's not unheard of in the auction world, especially when you're talking about being able to sell an authenticated copy of something, which I think is what they'll have the rights to do. So yeah, which nobody else will have. It's kind of more of the rights to what they have. And they've kind of come out and said, they're not ufologists. They're in it for what they have and they want to profit from it.
They never work. Can I make a comment on this? Cause you mentioned the thing about this showing the autopsy. One of the interesting things that I brought up with Jacques Vallée in my interview is this whole idea that Bob Bigelow was asked about the Roswell crash. And he said, well, yeah, there was the Roswell crash, but there's also a crash in Russia. There was a crash in China and there was a crash in South America. And I think they're seeding it. And then Tyler D, who's the famous NASA guy in the American Cosmic, said he called it the gifting field. When they went to the crash, they had the gifting field. So I brought up Jacques Vallée, and he said, well, I kind of came up with the idea. Yeah. The gifting thing. And that's the whole thing, that this may actually in the end not be a crash, not shot down, as Stephen Greer said. It may actually be a gift This was all planned. This is all orchestrated. And you get big names like Jacques Vallée and Bigelow and people who have inside knowledge. That changes the whole perspective of what's going on here in terms of the fact that this may have been a gift to us to help wake us up, not give us the answers, because nobody's really been able to figure out to be able to turn the craft on or start it or whatever. But it was a total different perspective. And I was kind of shocked when Jacques Vallée said, well, I was kind of came up with the idea of the gifting, that they were gifting this stuff. Because that's the whole thing with the metals. We get stuck with the metals and we say, oh, we got these metals and got the weird isotopes. And I keep saying, like, it doesn't come across the flying saucer doesn't fly through the galaxy and then little pieces start falling off. They're dropping this stuff on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Which falls in suit with the idea of gifting even being a gift of inspiration, like we see with so many contactees that get messages via their art or their music. So I like that idea. And I like that Vallée claimed credit for it. It's like, he's like, I was the source of that. I started it all.
Hey, Grant, there was a question in the chat about if you know anybody that's ever received apports during contact.
Yeah. Apports is actually extremely, extremely common. I mean, if you look at the Skinwalker Ranch, the ASOP program that was over top of the ATIP program, there was, Jacques Vallée points this out, there was no UFOs at Skinwalker Ranch. That's not why they went there. They went there because they were putting bulls, four bulls in a trailer. There's 20, I list 20 things. There was a post hole auger. It ended up 50 feet in a cottonwood tree. There was the woman came home with the groceries, put the groceries away, went back into the other room, came back, and the groceries were all back in the bag. That's what the Skinwalker Ranch was all about. It was about this paranormal apport, stuff disappearing, reappearing. That's what they're looking at, because if you're intelligence, that would be something you'd love to be able to do, to make stuff appear, disappear. And it's all about apports. It's all about the paranormal phenomena. That's why they went to Skinwalker Ranch. They weren't looking at UFOs. They're trying to figure out, how does reality work? As Kit Green said to Jim Peniston, how do they pop in and pop out just as quickly? That's the whole thing. It's much more complex than just aliens or this sort of thing. It's this bizarre stuff that was going on in Skinwalker Ranch. It was almost all manifestations and apports, and almost every experiencer has experiences where stuff appears, disappears. Apports and manifestations is very, very common. And that's what Ray Hernandez pointed out, that it's not just, it's all these different modalities that when you have experiencers, they'll have precognition, all these other things, apports. It's much more complex than just simply an alien coming here and interacting with somebody. It has this whole paranormal aspect that indicates that we really don't understand reality as well as we think we understand reality. And that's why DIA went to Skinwalker Ranch, because all this weird stuff was going on. And you discover new things in reality by looking at the anomalies. When an anomaly shows you've got something wrong in your understanding of reality, that's why DIA went to Skinwalker Ranch. That, I maintain, it was the main program. It was not UFOs. It was the paranormal stuff that was going on at Skinwalker Ranch.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have one final question for Dave Altman, if I could squeeze him on it a little bit. For a little while, we caught some news that Demi Lovato is making a UFO show, and then it kind of went silent. And now we know that you're behind the scenes on that a little bit. Are we going to get a new kind of UFO show out of her, or can you give us any sneak peeks on what you saw happening?
I mean, I really didn't see anything happening. You know, like you said, it was behind the scenes. I do know people, obviously, that were there and were filmed, that have told me good things. You know, I can't even talk about who I know that was on, but it should be out soon. They only did 4 episodes. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, I think people need to give it a chance before they, you know, put it down. In the second that people heard that she was doing it, it was just attack, and you know, I just feel that people should attack her after it comes out and it's bad. If it's bad, you never know. Could be good. I think it's going to be.
I'm really looking forward to it. I hope it shows a new perspective coming from a new experiencer who's diving into this. So I think it could be good. Anybody else have any questions on that topic?
No, let's ask Dave. Have you got any big guests coming up, Dave, on Space Dot Radio that we should be looking forward to?
Oh, goodness. After this past week, I'm a pretty, you know, I don't know how I top it, to be absolutely blunt. But, you know, there's always something good happening. And now that we're getting closer to contact in the desert, and how coincidental that the virtual contact in the desert this year, Grant, is going to be the same weekend when June 25th hits. I mean, that might be throwing presentations right out the window as they are going forward. And which reminds me, I still have to get you booked for a date. You know, you're one of the big wigs because Elizondo absolutely slammed your record for most live listeners during the show live. So you got to defend your title again. You got to reclaim it.
But Nicole has broken it. You and Nicole broke it today on this one. Anyway, I'll tell you an insight on contact in the desert. They're going to open a portal. I'm going to be on Steve Bassett, and they're going to open it up because they anticipate this. They know that this thing may drop. So they're going to have this open channel. You don't have to pay for it, but they want people to go on there and do what we're doing today in case the story breaks. Well, to the star, the contact in the desert is going on. So they're aware. They're opening a portal just in case the story breaks. But Danny says it's not going to break. Danny said it's going to be delayed. I think other people have said the same thing.
Well, I suggest we do these things as stories break every time. Let's just have one of these things happen to kind of do the update on that.
Have you got anything coming up? You run New Realities. You got a pretty big, you've interviewed God and Chuck Chopra and whoever.
My interview with Ralph Blumenthal was very interesting. He's going to be at Contact in the Desert, and he didn't hint at anything coming up, but it's sort of like I asked him and seemed like, I can't say, but it seemed like some stuff was going on there. And what else do I have coming up? Of course, JJ Hertog here and Desiree have been guests. I'll be talking to, Daryl Anka, who's probably one of the most well-known contactees. I'm interviewing him for the New Life Expo and 38 years of relationship. And of course, tonight, I'll show a little poster with Mark Sims. This is a major event there. Danny Sheehan, Whitley Strieber. Can you see that? Zinka. Anything you want to jump in here? Mark, who else we have? Bridget Nielsen, one of the best starseed communicators I've ever heard. Can you see that on your screen there?
Yes, yeah, we can see it.
Mark, you're going to be co-hosting with me. And anything you want to say about tonight?
I just put into the link the website where you can register for free. This is a free event, and this is going to be the first of two Saturday Night Alive events where me and Danny will be leading. So we're going to be inviting some other people. In fact, I plan on reaching out to Preston formally to ask if he would join and be on our event next week. That would be June 5th. I know you're in Laughlin, and that's where I'm going to be, and that's where Daniel Sheehan's going to be next weekend. So we're going to do the program live from Laughlin at the conference there, the Laughlin UFO conference. So and if there's anyone here who would be available, we have a few open slots. We just found out that we're going to do this again next weekend, a week from tonight. And so there's some wonderful people right here that I'd love to have be on there.
Yeah, Mark, I suggested, did you get a hold of my Chinese girl? Because I pointed out that we're talking here like this is America and Canada, and this is ufology. This is only 4% of the population of the Earth. We did the interview with Xiao Ma. Yeah. And so I suggested maybe try to bring her on to give a perspective that the rest of the world is having UFO sightings as well.
I'm sorry that Don Schmidt isn't still on with us, as well as that Victor Vigiani didn't come on with us tonight. Today, I listened to an amazing panel by the folks from what is the name of it again, Nicole?
ICER,
thank you. From the ICER International Group, and they're making sure that the media worldwide is addressing this disclosure story and how we can address this from a worldwide point of view. And I was so glad to listen to that I want to definitely follow what they're doing, and I recommend that everybody do. I thought there was very important things discussed on that panel today.
Yeah. I just want to go back to Xiao Ma. When I've interviewed her, she said that airport sighting that happened in China was at 2010. She said the craft actually landed and these beings came out, and Chinese officials met these beings and they seemed to have made some kind of treaty with the aliens and the Chinese. I don't know if that's true, but that's what she heard from inside China. So there's a lot happening in China. And I was also happy to hear that there's just this 5 billion Chinese, and she sort of is a representative of that because she can speak out. She left China, and a lot of people are having experiences, internal experience, dreamlike experience. It proves to me, and I already knew it, this is a worldwide phenomenon, absolutely happening in every country around the world, every continent, every race. This is a turning point in history. So.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you guys, we are hitting our time limit for this panel. And I think, Alan, that was a beautiful way to close this discussion today. I'd like to thank each and every one of you joining us today. And I'll thank James and Don, who were here and then had to leave. So this was quite the chat. And I look forward to these. Yes, we will have another one in the future, maybe 2 weeks from now. But does anybody else have a closing remark? I think we have a couple more minutes.
There were some statements made today about the way that ufology will react to this subject. I'm going to put out a plea there for everyone in the field, kind of clean up their act. That's one thing Jim said also say to me in the last conversation. As this unrolls over the next months and year and into the following year, that the UFO researchers are going to be the go-to people for a lot of questions asked by the media. And I ask that everybody, you know, dot their I's, cross their T's, you know, do good work. And because we're representing, like Don Schmidt said earlier, we're representing the rest of the information to the world that is going to have questions, and they're going to want to know the rest of the information. So we have a responsibility there. And that's one thing Jim said. He said, they're going to come to us. And, you know, he said, it's going to be boom time for ufology because, you know, everyone's going to be representing this subject to a hungry world and a hungry media.
As the Greeks said, ad astra, to the stars, we're just beginning the next chapter of history.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, that will wrap it up for today. I'll thank you all on behalf of...
It's wonderful that we get to be here to see history happen.
I'd like to thank you all on behalf of Grant Cameron's News Network, and we'll see you all again soon. Thank you very much. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Grant. Thank you, everyone.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.